Chapter 6. Elvie. Elvie sat in the high meadow, her legs stretched out before her, and watched quietly. The plant analogues, she couldn't really call them plants, lifted up above the dry beige soil, straining toward the sunlight. The tallest stood hardly more than half a meter with a flat, corrugated top that shifted to follow the sun and glittered the iridescent green of a beetle's carapace. A gentle breeze shifted the stalks and cooled Elvie's cheek. She didn't move. 4 meters away, a mimic lizard cooed. This time, the answering coo was closer. Elvie fought not to bounce with excitement. She wanted to wave her hands in glee, wanted to giggle. She stayed still as a stone. The prey species waddled closer. About the size of a sparrow, it had a soft rill of something like feathers or thick hair that ran down its sides. It had 6 long, ungainly legs, each ending in a doubled hook. She wanted to see them as fingers or toes, but she hadn't seen any of the little things use the hooks to manipulate anything. It cooed again, a soft, guttural chuffing halfway between a dove's call and a tambourine. The mimic lizard waited a moment, its wide-set eyes shifting toward the little animal. Elvie watched for the tremor in the lizard's side, an almost invisible fluttering of its scale-like skin. With the speed of a gun, the lizard's mouth unhinged and a mass of wet pink flesh shot out. The prey animal didn't so much as squeak as the lizard's inverted stomach drove it to the ground. Elvie's fists wriggled in delight as the mimic lizard began hauling its internal organs back across the dry ground. The prey species was dead or paralyzed, adhering to the pink flesh. Dirt and small stones stuck to the stomach, too. Eventually, the whole mass reached the mimic lizard's 2 wide jaw, and it began the long process of drawing the messy complex back through its mouth. From her previous observations, Elvie knew it would take the better part of an hour before the mimic lizard's newly concave sides filled out again. She stood up, dusting herself off and hobbled over. Her foot was still in the cast she'd gotten on that terrible first night. The pain from the broken bone was only a dull ache now, more an annoyance than a problem, but the cast made mobility an issue. She opened her satchel, the black lattice fabric ticking under her fingers, then gently lifted the feeding lizard into it. Its gaze flickered across her, untrusting. That was fair. "Sorry, little one," she said. "It's in the name of science." She closed the satchel and triggered the collection sequence. The lizard died instantly, and the internal assay sequence began, cataloging the gross structures of the animal's body, firing hair-thin needles through the corpse to gather samples at every boundary between tissues, and feeding the data up to the dedicated system in the satchel's strap. By the time she got back to her little hut and took the corpses out for storage and cataloging, the mimic lizard and its prey would be modeled in her computer. Terabytes of information ready to stream up to the Edward Israel, and from there, back to the labs on Luna. It would take the signal a few hours to travel the distance that had taken her 18 months, but for those hours, she and her work group would be the only people in all the billions of humans scattered throughout the planets who would know this little being's secrets. If God had come and offered her the Library of Alexandria in exchange, she wouldn't have taken the trade. As she tramped down the gentle slope toward her hut, the mining village spread out before her. It was tiny, 2 parallel streets with a gap in the middle that passed for a town square. The buildings were cobbled together from the supplies they'd brought and what they could find on the planetary surface. Everything stood at slightly wrong angles, like a handful of dice had been scattered there. She was used to the strict rectilinear architecture that came from living where space was precious. That didn't apply here. And it made the little town seem more organic, like it had simply grown there. Faez was sitting on the small porch outside her hut. His skin had darkened in the week since the crash. The preliminary hydrological study had kept him and several of the others from the team out in the field for almost 2 weeks. "You know what I love about this planet?" Faez said instead of hello. "Nothing?" He scowled at her, feigning hurt feelings. "I love the period of rotation. 30 hours. You can get a full day's work, stay up getting drunk at the saloon, and still get a full night's sleep. I don't know why we didn't think of this back home." "There are advantages," Elvie said, unlocking her door and stepping into the hut. "Of course it means we've been here almost 6 weeks in the past month," Faez said. "But thank God we didn't get one of those little spinning tops with sundown every 6 hours. Now, if they can just fix the gravity." The unit was a single 4x6 meter room with bed, shower, toilet, kitchen, and workstation all hunched together. As she put the satchel into the archiving unit, it struck her how much her work was about inferring things from design. As soon as she'd seen the mimic lizard's forward-facing eyes, she'd assumed it was a predator. Anyone looking at her hut would know it had been made with the assumption that space would be at a premium. Everything was an artifact of its function. That was what made evolution so gorgeous. She looked in the mirror over her little sink. Her skin was covered in a thin layer of beige dust, like stage makeup. "I don't want to do this," she said, wiping her cheeks with a damp tissue. "Look on the bright side," Faez said. "They've only tried to kill us once so far." "You aren't helping." "I'm not trying," he said, then winced at the unintentional reference to the dead man. They had cremated Governor Trying and the other casualties of the crash. Apart from one villager who'd arrived with non-responsive bone cancer, they had been the first human deaths on the world. Certainly, they were the first murders. But after that, the people from the village had been nothing but kind. Lucia Merton, the doctor who'd come to help them after the crash, had followed up with each of the survivors. A belter from Ceres named Jordan had brought Elvie food that his wife had cooked for the injured. The holy man had invited her to the services at the village temple. Everything about the inhabitants of New Terra said that they were kind, gentle, authentic people. Except that someone had killed the governor and almost a dozen others. The RCE encampment stood south of the village proper. With Elvie and Faez included, a little less than half the RCE employees on the surface had chosen to attend the village's community meeting. The others were involved in their work or still too badly injured. If she hadn't felt it was part of her job to educate everyone about the contamination hazards, Elvie would probably have stayed back at her hut too. Most of the RCE personnel were field scientists. They dressed for comfort, herself included. The only ones in formal clothes were the security team. Hobart Reeve, Murtry's second, led 3 armed guards in RCE uniforms that made them look like soldiers or police. They hadn't been on the big shuttle, but had arrived on a light shuttle almost immediately. When the order had come in from RCE that no new personnel were going planetside until the UN Observer arrived, Reeve had already been investigating what he always called the incident. The community hall was one side of the village's central square, set across the bare dirt and stone from the temple. Apart from the collection of religious iconography at the temple's eaves, the two were hard to tell apart. The chairs were made from industrial cowling and modified crash couches. If the village had been in a more temperate part of the planet, there would have been more local flora, some sort of wood analog to use. But this was where the lithium was nearest the surface, and lithium was what would bring money to the community. So, like a microorganism moving along a concentration gradient, all of humanity had come to these 20 square kilometers. Elvie sat at the back with the other RCE employees, except Reeve and the security detail, who sat closer to the front with the locals. She watched them all segregate without a word. No one enforced the separation, but it was there. Michaela, an atmospheric physicist, sat beside her with a smile. Annika and Tor, both geoengineers, sat on her other side, hand in hand. Faez in the couch beyond her, talking with Sudyam, who had come down with the first small shuttle after the accident. The incident. The attack. Annika leaned in and murmured something to Tor. He blushed and nodded a little too vigorously. Elvie tried to ignore the sexual byplay. The mayor of First Landing was a thick-featured Martian woman with a broad accent and finger-cut hair named Carol Chiwiwi. Only they called her the coordinator, not the mayor. She called the meeting to order, and Elvie felt her heart starting to beat faster. The Belters had set the agenda, and so it started off with issues that were more important to them than to Elvie or RCE. The maintenance schedule for the water purification systems, whether to accept a credit line from an OPA-backed bank at unfavorable terms, or wait until the first load of lithium came back and try for better. Everything was talked about in calm, considered terms. If there was anger, or fear, or murder, they had buried it so deeply that the mound didn't show. Reeve's turn came, and he stepped smartly to the front of the room. His lips made a thin, forced smile. "Thank you, Madam Coordinator, for inviting us to speak," he said. "We have confirmation that the Independent Observer is on the way with a commission from the UN, the Martian Congress, and the OPA to assist with moving the development of the colony forward. It is our hope to have the security issues addressed before they arrive." "We hope to hang the bad guys on a rope before anyone gets here and says we can't," Faez translated quietly enough for the words to reach Elvie's ears and no farther. "We have definitively identified the explosive used in the attack, and we are looking into which individuals had access to it. We don't have a goddamn clue who did it, and since you Hicks store mining explosives in an unlocked shed, we aren't going to figure it out anytime soon. I don't have to explain the gravity of this situation, but Royal Charter Energy is committed to the success of this colony for both our employees and this community. We're all in this together, and my door is always open to anyone with questions or concerns. And I hope that we can rely on the same kindness and collaboration that you've extended to us since we came. So, since we've got nothing, we'd really appreciate it if those of you who know who set the charges would just tell us. And also, please consider not murdering us in our sleep. Thanks for that." Sudyam coughed to hide her laughter, and Faez flashed a grin. At the front of the room, Reeve nodded and stepped down. The coordinator stood up, looking toward the back of the room. Elvie felt a sudden, powerful need to urinate. "Dr. Okoye," the coordinator said, "you wanted to speak?" Elvie nodded and rose to her feet. It was about 10 meters to the front of the room, and Elvie walked forward with her nerves screaming. The heat of the crowd's bodies seemed suddenly oppressive, the smell of sweat and dust overwhelming. Her tongue felt sticky and thick in her mouth, but she smiled. At an estimate, 200 people sat before her, their eyes on her. Her heart ticked over so fast she had to wonder whether there was enough air in the room. She remembered someone telling her once to look for a friendly face in the crowd and pretend she was only speaking to them. 4 rows in on the left, Lucia Merton was sitting with her hands folded in her lap. Elvie smiled, and the woman smiled back. "I just wanted to take a minute," Elvie said, "to talk about how we can limit cross-contamination with the environment, because we lost the dome, the hard perimeter dome." Lucia looked grave. Elvie chanced to look at the rest of the crowd and then wished she hadn't. Part of the RCE's agreement with the UN was that we do a complete environmental study. We're in just the second biosphere that we've ever seen, and there's so much we don't know about it that the more we can keep it pristine, the better we'll be able to understand it. Ideally, we'd have a totally enclosed system here on the surface, tight as a ship, airlocks and decontamination rooms and... She was babbling. She grinned, hoping that someone would smile back. No one did. She swallowed. Every time we breathe, we're taking in totally unknown microorganisms. And even though we've got different proteomes, we're still big blobs of water and minerals. Sooner or later, one of the indigenous species is going to find a way to exploit that. And it goes the other way, too. Every time we defecate, we're introducing billions of bacteria into the environment.
So, now you're going to tell us how we can shit? A man's voice said.
Elvie felt the sudden heat of a blush in her neck and cheeks. Even Lucia's expression had gone cold and distant, the woman's gaze fixed on nothing. I only meant that if we were doing this right, we'd have a protected, sterile environment, and we wouldn't be going out into the ruins or cultivating crop plants in the open air because...
Because you think we did it wrong,
the man sitting at Lucia's side said. He was a big man, with a dusting of gray at his temples and in the stubble of beard, and a permanently angry face.
Only you don't get to decide that.
I understand that we're working with a complex situation here, Elvie said, her voice getting rough with desperation. But we're all living in this massive petri dish already, and I have a list of a few little sacrifices that we can all make that, from a scientific perspective...
The man beside Lucia Merton flushed, and he leaned forward, his fists on his thighs, his eyes fixed on her like a predator's.
I'm done sacrificing things to science, he said, and the buzz in his voice was a promise of violence.
Lucia put a restraining hand on the man's wrist, but others around the room had taken up the man's disdain. The sounds of their bodies shifting in the seats, the murmur of voices and small conversations of their own filled the air. Whoever killed Trying is probably in this room, she thought. And then, immediately after that, what the hell am I doing here? Carol Chiwiwi stood up, her expression pained, embarrassed on Elvie's behalf.
Maybe we better come back to that another time, Dr. Okoye, she said. It's late, and people are tired, nay?
Yes, Elvie muttered. Yes, of course. Her skin burning with shame, she walked back toward her seat and then past it, out into the street and alone in the deepening night toward her hut. Her shoes scraped in the gravel and dirt. The air was cool and smelled like coming rain. She wasn't more than halfway there, moving slowly in the near black starlight, when a voice stopped her. I'm sorry about my dad. Elvie turned. The girl was little more than a deeper darkness in the night, a slightly more solid shadow. Elvie found herself thankful that the voice wasn't a man's. It's okay, she said. I don't think I did that very well.
No, it's him, the girl said, stepping closer. You couldn't have done right with him. My brother died, and now Dad's not that kind of man anymore.
Oh, Elvie said, and then, I'm sorry. The girl nodded, shuffled with something, and a pale green light no brighter than a candle bloomed in her palm, casting shadows up over the girl's face. She was pretty, the way youth is always pretty. But when she got older, Elvie thought she might be beautiful the way her mother was.
You're Dr. Merton's daughter, Elvie said.
Felcia, the girl said.
Good to meet you, Felcia, Elvie said.
I can walk you home, if you don't have a light.
I don't, Elvie said. I should have brought one.
Everyone forgets sometimes, the girl said, setting off. Elvie trotted a little to catch up with her. For a dozen meters, they walked in silence. Elvie sensed that the girl was building up to something, a confession or a threat, something dangerous. Elvie hoped that she was just being paranoid and was certain that she wasn't. When the girl spoke at last, her voice was tight with anxiety and longing, and her words were the last thing Elvie would have guessed. What's it like going to a real university?